Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on Gold Radio Cafe. It's Friday, August 3rd, 2012, and welcome to the Gold and Silver Financial Review. My name is Bosco Kacharovich, and this program is brought to you by Central Metals. We understand the problem, and we have the answer. Our website is centralmetalscorp.com, and our phone number is 519-915-7542. We will be accepting email questions during the program, and those can be directed to mail@centralmetalscorp.com. There is also a link directly on my website. You can send us email questions there. I also provided a link to our guest's website or to our guest's email address, Jeff Dunphy. So if anyone wants to send Jeff an email, you can do that. Jeff, we had first, welcome to the program, Jeff. How are you doing today?
Good afternoon, Bosco. I'm doing just well. We got lots to talk about today, don't we?
Yeah, there's a lot of economic indicators and announcements came out this week. I guess we could start off with, we'll start back near the beginning of the week. We had the FOMC meeting, and, last week there was a lot of drama in the markets. All the meeting is coming out, and turns out that the Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke, didn't really have much to say from what I saw. They didn't make any decisions on changing interest rates, and basically they're saying that they're going to keep an eye on the market, and they leave it open to make any changes in the future. So what do you make of that?
Well, I think in typical fashion, it's pretty hard for them to lower rates to do any more stimulation, any more stimulus, and I become increasingly skeptical about their activity. And as has been said on various TV programs about parents and their adolescent kids, as soon as they realize we're powerless, we're hooped. And I think the Fed is coming to find that if they just don't do anything, hopefully they can manage through their potential manipulation of the markets to keep things steady in this demise as they sink under the waves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. There's they're kind of backed in a corner. There's really not much they can do. They can just wait and see. And then we had the European central banker, Mario Draghi. That was a lot of drama surrounded that based on his comments from last week that they stand ready to do anything it takes to save the euro. A lot of traders, I guess, took that as a positive for the European Union, but there was some market action last week regarding that. But then he came out and really kind of in line with what Bernanke was doing. He didn't really say much. Didn't say that they were going to create any new stimulus, that they were going to back anybody, that they're, basically it's going to kind of a wait-and-see approach. Do you think this is the card that they're going to play just to keep people, I guess, in anticipation ahead of the U.S. election this year?
Well, you pointed out something important, and that's the political agenda here, and you've also the fiscal agenda. Fiscal, political, and economic all are tied to each other at the hip, as you well know. I want to point out a couple of insights into the Mario Draghi declaration, because I suspect, as the news stipulates, that they're having a bit of a face-off, if you will, or a bit of a sparring contest between Mario Draghi of the European Central Bank and Jens Weidmann. And Jens runs the Bundesbank, and as you know, the Bundesbank, Germany, the German bank, while it is only one of 12, or 13, whatever it is in terms of the euro, it is by far the heaviest hitter in there. And Jens has basically said, hold your powder there, Mario. Be careful that you're making promises that you can't keep, or we won't let you keep. So there is some drama behind the doors of these banks about how best to do this. The other the other stipulation is they're going to be left with almost nothing to do relative to interest rates because they can't lower them any further, but to print money. Now, are they going to be transparent in their printing of money, which will only lend itself to more calamitous manipulation of the gold market, or are they going to do it outside of the guise and outside of the observation of the collective gang? Are they going to do it secretly, or are they going to do it blatantly? We'll see.
Yeah, I think based on history, I think that they're going to, you know, kind of make that decision behind closed doors. And then, you know, a lot of people think that they're going to make major announcements on planned meetings, for example, the FOMC meeting and different things, and, you know, where everyone's anticipating something. But I think they're going to have a meeting behind closed doors one day and, you know, make a decision on adjusting currencies and so on, and then just come out unexpectedly and make an announcement, just like former President Richard Nixon did on August 15th, 1971, when he announced that the U.S. dollar is no longer going to be backed by gold. So that kind of, I guess, shocked many people, and I'm sure that, you know, similar kind of tactics are going to be used. They'll just make an announcement. This is the way currencies are going to be measured, and who knows what they're really thinking. But in my opinion, I think they're not going to make any major announcements on planned meetings, if you will. But I guess that has yet to be determined. So. What else we got? Just to give people some prices here, we have, another announcement today. We talk, since we're on the subject of economic indicators and so on, today we had the jobs number come out in the U.S., which was a little bit higher than expected, and we've seen gold in a knee-jerk reaction. It went down about $10, and then it bounced back, and now we're in positive territory. Gold is at 1604, and silver is at spot silver is at 2772. And for those interested with the U.S. Canadian dollar, the spot price is 0.998. So actually, the Canadian dollar is on the spot market is a little bit stronger. I'm sure you're not going to get those prices at the bank, but
we're getting closer to parity, though, aren't we, Bosco?
Yeah, parity. You know, it's, and you know, Jeff, last time I think it was in 2009, the Canadian dollar was much stronger, and then all of a sudden we've seen a major change. You know, the stock market in the U.S. started rallying. You know, in that particular relationship, do you think that the Canadian dollar is going to reach those, or has a chance of reaching those former highs?
Well, it's a good point, Bosco. The Canadian dollar is viewed in international trading circles as a commodity-based dollar. Now, whether that's right, true or not, I'm not sure. The Australian dollar right now is also viewed in a commodity aspect as well. The Canadian and the Australian companies, the economies, are viewed quite positively. Now, their girth is of modest consequence to the global economic gig. However, we do play instantaneous, let's run around between the Europe and the US dollar, and maybe a bit in Canada and a bit in Australia. We will see what transpires. I mean, the job numbers come out, and again, I express my skepticism, as I always have, and I think they manage the perception of their economic indicators so as to not upset anybody and not create a bunch of havoc. I think the Canadian dollar is getting a bit of a boon because there's some the middle of the Syrian nonsense with Kofi Annan, resignation in process, the mess in Syria, the Russians and the Chinese sort of siding in a sense with Syria, and the Americans moving and doing some stuff where they basically declare that they're going to do in Syria what they did in in Libya, sort of reading between the lines, there's some calamity going on in the petroleum markets, and consequently the Canadian dollar gains from that, if we can insightfully look into that. So there is stuff afoot, and it brings me to what I make reference to as the law of acceleration, and it's like watching the water drain down into the bathtub, and it is, there's a bunch of stuff happening faster and faster and faster, and it gives us pause, and we need to pay attention to what is going on, because as you and I both know, and as we like to share with our listeners, there is a whole bunch of stuff behind closed doors, as you just posited, that we need to be thinking about. What aren't they telling us? What aren't they saying relative to what's going on here? Because we are in trepidatious times, we are in tumultuous times, and we need to be mindful about how we move forward.
This whole Syria issue is very troubling. I was reading today that Russia is now maneuvering their battleships that have hundreds of Marines on them.
Yes, indeed.
It's scary to think that we're on the edge of a new war now in Syria, which is, the U.S. has been waging war in the Middle East for, over 10, 11 years now. But now you get some other major countries involved like Russia, and you're talking, this could be something serious. And, based on the Canadian dollar, your comments, I would agree that, if the oil markets are at risk, and the Canadian dollar is in a fashion linked to oil, the Canadian dollar, I guess if you want to have money in cash, the Canadian dollar would probably be one of the better ones to hold based on that analysis.
Well, exactly. We're also watching the oil market right now, Boss, go up by $4.50. I mean, we've got, Brent crude is on Bloomberg is almost at $1.09. That's up $3 and change. And the NYMEX is at up $4.50. So these traders trade instantaneously, and on the second anything breaks, and that's given the information they get. How, as we know, the Rothschilds traded on information before the market got it.
Mm-hmm.
Our discernment disposition is making sure that we sort of read between the lines and pay attention to whether what they're telling us is what they want us to hear, or what they're telling us is the truth.
Right.
Canadian dollar is a good commodity dollar, but the other thing that is quite upsetting is yet another little financial firm called Knight Capital, which was one of the big traders, just declared a computer glitch and compromised the New York Stock Exchange, and the trading system malfunctioned. Well, again, one of those things that you look upon and think, good grief, here's a company that is in the trading business, in the business of the technological algorithm, where they trade with excessively powerful computers in nanosecond trades, and it blows itself up to the tune of $440 million. It creates a huge calamity in the stock exchange. Stock prices move around and change dramatically, and they go, oops, sorry, it was a computer glitch. This is a bit disconcerting.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I just had a conversation with one of my dealers this morning, and I get a lot of clients in here that do their own trading online, and I think this isn't the first time that we've had the markets react in a negative way to a computer glitch, and I think that sends a strong signal. It should send a strong fundamental signal to investors that, hey, if the markets are that dependent on technology and these kind of things can happen, what does that say about the foundation that these markets are built on? I mean, if a small computer glitch can create that much of a loss, okay, then obviously that the fundamentals for investing are not there. There's something wrong. It's based on, like you said, high frequency trading and just people, you know, what we used to call it in the trading industry, scalping. When I was a broker, it was scalping. These traders are just looking to take a few cents off the market, but that few cents on that one trade times, you know, 100,000 trades a day, you're talking some serious money there. And then,
exactly.
You know, I mean, this is another reason why we've had, you know, why we recommend to people, you know, again, every situation depends on suitability, but, you know, this isn't a good time to have a large portion of your savings in the market. I would either, you know, get it out of the market, get it into gold or silver, or put it into something conservative, cash, or, I mean, I have people invest in art. I don't know anything about art, but put your money in a nice painting or some other hard assets that real estate. I know we were going to discuss real estate. What do you think about the real estate markets now?
Well, I mean, I think we've just seen in both the Post and the Globe and the various papers across the country this morning that the Vancouver market is taking a long sigh of decline, 10, 12, 8%-ish in terms of activity and the like. I mean, the Vancouver market, in my opinion, has been heavily inflated due to the Asian influence of people coming in. The Toronto market has experienced a pause or a decline as well. I mean, one of the things that transpires in this time, and I think we chatted about this last week, is when you start to see the demise of a currency, you get out of the currency and you start to buy real assets. So Bosco, we aren't in the hundreds of billions of money management or even the trillions, but guys way smarter than you and I are saying our money's going to be worthless soon. What can we do to buy things, which is what the Chinese are doing. They're coming into Canada and throwing money around like a drunken sailor, saying, let's buy commodities, let's buy land, let's buy real assets. And again, I would be, you know, advising everybody to pay attention on what is going on with gold. Who is buying gold? Who is buying real assets? Because I think, I mean, one of the aspects that happens with Knight Capital, it also brings back the, when we go retrospectively and look back at these things, the absolute quickness in which these things went under, right? I mean, Lehman Brothers just disappeared. MF Global with John Clozine, I mean, he woke up one day, came on the news and went, geez, I don't know, we just lost $2 billion. It just disappeared. Merrill Lynch disappeared, Countrywide disappeared, AIG disappeared. They disappeared in the fact that they needed a bailout immediately or, right, you know, of course, the government couldn't let them just fall into the waves. They forced and peddled and pumped money into them. So the velocity at which these companies go up the stump gives me great concern about the very real systemic risk in the stock market or in counterparty risk. And one of the things that we also have chatted about is the $700 trillion derivative market out there that just sort of casually moves itself into the back pages of the newspaper. Well, it's still there, ladies and gentlemen, and it's also something to be mindful of. So a thought came to me today, which is not a particularly pleasant one and may sound a bit catastrophic, but could the powers that be, when they realize this printing of money into infinity or quantitative easing to infinity, when they realize that they can't do this anymore, do they crash the system and blame it on a computer glitch? Food for thought, perhaps, Bosco.
Yeah, no, it's... this is the thing, Jeff, that now everything that's going on there, you can't be certain about anything. And, you know, the European Central Bank is, I mean, countries around Europe are you know, collapsing literally, financially speaking anyway. And it's a very troubling time to to be an investor. And you know, this is the time where it's you know, you have people need to wake up to the reality. I know the financially speaking, the reality it doesn't look that good, but I mean, right now is a time better to be safe than sorry. And I mean, we on this program, I want to give people a disclosure. We, you know, all the opinions and comments on this program are not to be considered official financial advice. So we can't be responsible for any losses based on our opinions. I would recommend everybody speak to a registered financial advisor for their investment portfolio. But we welcome anyone to give us comments and ask questions. And I mean, myself, I was a licensed and registered broker before. Right now, I don't actively work in that capacity, but I can always offer my opinion. So, but Jeff, I was just looking at the you know, it's funny, in the Financial Post online here, they're talking about Europe, what happens now, and they got a picture of a lady jumping off a cliff. Maybe they're listening to your analogy about someone flapping their wings going down. You know, they're talking about the... So, folks, one of the news sources that I follow quite regularly for a number of years now, that you'll get some good information for and some truth about what's happening in the markets is the International Forecaster. That newsletter comes out once a week. The website is www.theinternationalforecaster.com, and if anybody would like a copy, I can give you an email that you could send them, and they would give you a free copy. So if anybody wants information on that, they could send me an email, and I could direct you to the International Forecaster. Jeff, what we had some other comments. What were we looking at here? Anything you want to discuss?
Well, there. I mean, as always, Bosco, there is. I certainly want to reiterate your observation and our collective declaration that our primary objective, ladies and gentlemen, is to offer you food for thought, to propagate and promote self-reliance, and to propagate and promote discernment in what the financial markets, what the political agendas, and what the fiscal agendas are everywhere. The fact that we actively and personally are invested in gold and silver and commodities does not in any way impose our opinion on you, but it is collectively and collaboratively for the benefit of all that we share this information to you. Self-reliance and discernment about what you're hearing and what you're listening in the press is a very important thing because, in my opinion, certainly from a historic perspective, those we talk about the propagandists. Well, Joseph Goebbels was a brilliant propagandist, and he led a country into a pretty serious pickle a few short decades ago. But one of the things that they did in the study of his methodology and manner by which he manipulated mass media is it speaks volumes to what is potentially being done right now. And so consequently, the whole aspect of being able to discern what really is being said, being able to rely upon yourself for this and really and without sounding too silly, the U.S. government, I'm talking in the terms of Biggs, and I suspect the Canadian government as well, has given us all kinds of reasons not to think that they are reliable upon. You know, we generally don't think that, I mean, FEMA, the whole catastrophe of Katrina was an unbelievably sound example of how poorly the U.S. government will take care of you. So we have examples of this where they don't have the capacity to, and two, it is naive of us to think that they will take care of us. It's just a silly thing. And, you know, an interesting observation that has come out a little while ago is the Department of Homeland Security recently announced that they had recently purchased 450 million bullets that are hollow-pointed, which means that when they shoot them at you, they fracture and split up as they hit you in the body. Well, I don't know. Color me curious, Bosco. Why does the Homeland Security need to have 450 million bullets? It's enough to kill everybody in the States more than once.
Yeah,
the Homeland Security is fighting armies or wars anywhere else but in their own country. Are they worried that everybody's going to wake up and say, just a second, you aren't out for our good, you're out for your own? Again, discernment. How does this stuff appeal to, how does this stuff appear? This seems a bit odd. And, you know, let us not be so naive as to think that our self-reliance is not the most important thing. Because the government will not take care of you, I suspect, as we've seen over and over and over again.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I had a conversation with some clients this week. This is one of the hardest, I think, hurdles to overcome, is because, we've been conditioned or grew up, believing that the government is going to be there for us, and which I think is naive to begin with. You should always be resourceful and, take care of your own backyard. Don't depend on the government. The problem is that we have so many people now on, government assistance and so on that, when you speak to them about waking up and being independent, they don't want to hear it. And this is where the votes come from. So there's a lot of problems in the system, but regarding what's happening in the U.S., there's some talk recently about a similar, I guess, attempt to how can you say, overthrow freedom and liberty in America in the 1930s, when there was, and I guess this classified information was released recently, that there was a fascism coup that wanted to overthrow the government in 1933-34, and one of the army generals over there, Smedley Butler, who was a highly decorated officer, was involved in that, and he played along with the perpetrators of this coup until the very end, when he blew the whistle on them. And the information is out, and J.P. Morgan was involved. Prescott Bush, which is George Bush Jr.'s grandfather, he was involved, and there was a number of other high-ranking financial people involved in that. That it came close to that. America could have been a fascist government back then, and maybe now they're attempting something similar. And just trying to do it in a different way, but things don't really look that good, and this is just one of the things. It's just time to be conservative and resourceful, and I would suggest to many people that there's nothing wrong with doing that. Nothing wrong. I talked to some of my clients who are looking at preserving food. When I was a kid, my parents always had canned food in the cellar and smoked meat and a garden and that, those kind of small things that people can do to, just to have something set aside, water and so on, just in case. And, you don't have to look at it that you're it's not someone that believes that there's anarchy coming or whatever. It's just there's nothing wrong with being prepared, it's just part of
self-reliance, right, Bosco?
Yeah.
Self-reliance.
And it's very troubling right now to see what's happening in America because, I live so close to America here, and, I'm over there all the time, and just the changes taking place over the border is just, incredible. You're pretty much going through all kinds of X-ray machines just when you go through the border. Before they had nothing. You walk up to or drive up to the booth, they ask for your birth certificate, where you're going, and that's it. You're on your way. And now it requires so much information, and you're being X-rayed and recorded and this and that. It's just a lot of changes happening. And, you know, it's just part of it. I think it's a cycle or a period in history where, you know, you look back at all the things that we've been through in history. We had World War I, World War II, you know, and the many wars before that. Empires have you know, been created and collapsed. And what makes it different now? It's just the nature of the way the world works, and things go up and they go down. And now is the time, I believe, that people should be prepared. And nobody wants war, but unfortunately, Jeff, based on what's happening now in Syria and with Russia being involved, I think something is definitely going to start over there in Syria, and it could be, you know, spread to the rest of Middle East. I don't know.
Well, Bosco, you've made several big points, some of which I want to address. I mean, the first one, because I do want to come back to Syria for the moment, but the first one is there's a statement, and I don't know who made this quote, but it is very germane to this conversation, and that is a society or an economy where the government or the people backstop failures of business, i.e. through saving these calamities because they've collapsed, isn't a democracy. It's fascist, right? When the government backstops businesses from going bankrupt, which it has with all of these businesses, right? They throw a few under the bus, but then all of a sudden they say, well, how much money can we give you so you won't go bust? This was the formation of the banking cartel. It was done, it was initiated in 1910, and it was brought in with the Federal Reserve Act in 1913. So that, again, was when you have an economic system or a government system that backstops the failure and throws it onto the back of the people. I mean, this is not a democracy. And then let's stipulate a couple of things. As we've spoken about the law of acceleration, and the law of acceleration, as I've said before, is things are getting faster and faster and faster, to which I would observe and note things in Syria are worse today than they were a week ago. They're worse today than they were 3 weeks ago. And I suspect if we follow that line, they're going to be worse tomorrow than they are today. And I think with the collapse of yet another capital market company, Knight Capital, I suspect things are worse today in the financial markets than they were a week ago or they were a month ago, and I suspect it's easy to say and to project that they are going to get worse. This is not something that pulls out. This is an engine of decline that is no longer running, okay? And it brings us back to some of the lies that we have addressed in earlier programs. Bosco, the 12 lies we sort of have suggested we're going to wander through. And that brings me to the third point, and that is the one of the lies we've spoken about before was that real estate would always go up. Mm-hmm. One of the lies I want to address today is that government pension and medical programs will deliver on their promises. Well, do you think the Greeks are going? Yes, they're coming through. Nope. When Greece went up the stump, they all said, yeah, guess what? You're going to get 20 cents or 25 cents on the dollar if you're lucky. Yeah. So governments have four options in order to slow this thing down. I mean, they can cut promised benefits, which we've seen. I expect we are or will see in Spain and Italy as well. And we will see throughout Europe these countries that are saying, we as governments have blown our brains out by borrowing and spending in order to stay in power. And now you, the people, have to pay for it. So they can cut benefits. They can increase tax revenue. That didn't work very well in Greece, did it, Bosco? Everybody said, no flipping way. We're not going to be paying extra taxes. They can borrow even more money, and we see with the fight right now that's going on between Mario Draghi and Jens Weidmann of the Bundesbank, the Germans don't want to lend everybody more money. And then they can print new money, which is, it would appear, is the only option they have. When they print more money, they devalue the currency, they send further upward pressure on gold and silver, the commodities. We step into this place where when calamity takes hold, as A blind man on a galloping horse, Bosco, can see calamity has taken hold. The commodities to fall back into and embrace are gold and silver. I don't know. Color me curious. If there are other people out there that have contrary opinions or have observations that we're missing, we are always looking to embrace and to create a more comprehensive storyline. And forgive us if both Bosco and I sound a bit like broken records, but we're doing what we can to turn the lights on effectively.
Well, yeah, Jeff, it's one of those things you got to just keep because, I mean, in my waking up period, you know, it wasn't something that I accepted right away. It took me a while, and I had the benefit of you know, working in the industry at the time when I woke up, so I can kind of see firsthand really what was going on. But with the benefit of some experienced people, namely Bob Chapman and a number of others, Jim Rogers and Mark Faber, and I could go on and on, you know, started reading, and then, you know, it's not something that I wanted to accept right away, that, you know, the government and the system is rigged, and that, you know, I never really, one of the things that really made me curious was how is inflation created? Where does it come from? Who controls the money? You know, why is money valued at this? Why does the price or the loaf of bread change, you know, from 50 years ago is 10 cents and it's $2 now, same loaf of bread? How does inflation get created? And after I learned that, you know, that the Federal Reserve, you know, controls the money supply, and that's where inflation comes from. And when you realize that it's not that the price of something is going up, the value of something doesn't change. A loaf of bread is the same loaf of bread it was 50 years ago. It's the amount of currency, the amount of paper dollars it takes to buy that loaf of bread. And same thing applies to gold. Gold doesn't change. 1 ounce of gold today is the same ounce of gold it was 50 years ago. It's the value of the dollars it takes to buy that ounce of gold. So, and, you know, this is where you have to look at your standard of living, your quality of life. What difference do we have than, for example, my father, who grew up in Ontario as well, you know, he was paying 25 cents for a loaf of bread. You know, what difference, what quality of life do I have that's different than him? Nothing really. I mean, we all still eat bread. We all drive cars. We all live in houses. We all, you know, everything's more expensive. So really, what's the big difference? The difference is that the prices are higher, but it's not that the quality of your food is better. I think it's even worse now than it was back then with all the chemicals and so on that they're adding to food. But this is where, you know, it's an awakening process. It doesn't take, you know, people might be listening to this show for 6 months before they actually wake up and take action and do something about it. But I guess we're here to keep that broken record going, I guess. I don't know.
Well, that's exactly right. And we also speak, Bosco, at length and ad nauseum to some, perhaps, but we speak of the value, the store of value, and we do genuinely believe in our heart of hearts and also in our actions that gold and silver are real stores of value. And we have spoken in past shows about if your father gave you or your grandfather gave you $10,000 in 1971, that $10,000 today, if you could have invested it at 3%, would be worth $40,000, $35,000, $40,000 right now. Mm-hmm. The same amount of gold, $10,000 of gold in 1971, would be worth close to $500,000, $440,000. So in terms of those numbers, those are real numbers, and those are store of value gauges and barometers. So it isn't something that we can't prove. We think that we do and can and undertake to give you these stories and this illumination, if you will, to give you insight into where we come from.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and part of that, too, is people need to understand that, you know, being a gold investor And you know, I hope that people don't label me as a gold bug, because I don't consider myself a gold bug, if you will. That's kind of, I don't know if it's a negative term or not, but you know, I don't you know, sit there and some coin collector that just collects gold coins and doesn't look at. I'm objective. I mean, I used to be a trader in commodities and mutual funds and so on, and I'm open to other things. I just, over the years, have determined that gold and silver is the only place to be right now, and you know, I just don't see any other safe place for your money. And unfortunately, sure, I'm willing to take risk. I've taken many risks in my career. This whole business is a risk, but gold is one of those things that is competition to the financial markets. It's competition to paper currency. So, of course, governments and the financial industry and banks are going to create a negative opinion on gold investing. But, you know, it's competition like anything else. You're competing, so you don't want to say positive things about your competition. You're competing, so you want to, I guess it's a political thing that you make a political statement when you're a gold investor. You're saying that you believe that the government and the financial system is gone astray, and you feel safety in physical gold or silver or even physical assets, and that's it's a big step, and you know, it takes time to get to that point. But you can't deny, the thing is, I don't understand, is you can't deny the performance of gold over the past 10, 12 years. I mean, it's outperformed every other asset class, and people still, a lot of financial planners just don't get it.
Well, I think, Bosco, the other thing that we do like to do on occasion is we like to go macro. And I think micro of 10 years and micro of 30 years and micro of 50 years is, yes, gold has been great over 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 years. But really, when you take a quick peek at history, gold hasn't been valuable for 100 years. It's been valuable for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Yeah. So as Churchill coined, but also I'm sure many ancient philosophers coined as well, and that is, what you fail to remember about history, you're destined to fall into the same foibles. You're destined to repeat. And I think gold has been something that everybody falls back into in times of calamity. And in the Weimar Republic, when people were wandering around with all this money trying to buy a loaf of bread, the farmers who were trying to use their bucket loads of money to buy food, the farmers had stores in their barns and hidden under their tables of the gold and silver that people would come in and trade for food. Are we suggesting that might happen right now? I'm not sure, but I tell you, in the time of a calamity that was a very short period of time ago, this is how people paid for things when their currency disappeared. Is our currency going to disappear? Who knows? I think I'd rather be safe than sorry, and it certainly is a value, a store of value that has been known about since as long as we can think back to remember.
Right. Yeah, with that, folks, so, you know, history is important, and, you know, take a look at history and you know, apply that knowledge to today, and you should be in good hands. And, Jeff, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We look forward to always to your comments and your lessons, and we have good comments for the show, and hopefully we can we'll keep it going for everyone, and hope you have a good weekend.
Thanks, Bosco, and thank you very much for allowing me to be of service.
Okay, goodbye.